come with me into the tormented, haunted, half-lit night of the insane. This is my work. Let me lead you into it. Let me take you into the mind of a woman.
Hi, and welcome to Beyond the Cabin in the Woods, a good ghoul's guide to horror. I'm your poltergeist, Kinsey.
I'm your poltergeist, Donna.
I'm your poltergeist, Mac.
And this week, we watch the brand spanking new film, Imaginary. So we're going to be in spoiler territories very quickly. So if you haven't seen it yet, just pause and come back to us.
If you've seen any movie, you've probably seen this one.
That's fair. So let's go around. Did you like it? Did you not like it? How was your experience in the theater?
You know, I was entertained by it. I didn't hate that I spent $9 for a ticket. I actually want to start by when I went there, I realized I didn't have any way to take notes. So I stopped by the Five Below on my way there and found this journal, which I know those of you who aren't signed up for the video feed can't see. So it is a plush journal. I mean, it is soft and plushy. It has fur.
It appears to depict a bear and a unicorn in some sort of unspeakable act together.
Yeah, I don't understand. I think the bear is wearing a unicorn fanny pack.
Okay, let's hope that's the case, because otherwise...
I think that's what this is.
I don't think that's legal in Oklahoma, whatever they're doing right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, so the bear has a unicorn around its waist?
Yeah, I don't know, man.
And the bear has adorable little floppy ears. And then I also got a set of scented markers.
Ooh.
This one is very cherry. So
this would have been the right gift set for Lisa Frankenstein.
It would have been.
Lisa Frank set.
This is. And then I took no notes. So I also bonded with a young woman in the lobby over the wonderful experience that is popcorn at the Apex Cinema in Muskogee. And I'm not being sarcastic. I know that sounded a little sarcastic, but they just like hand you a tub and then you go out into the lobby and get your own popcorn that you can layer generously with butter.
Fascinating.
It is amazing. So if you happen to like layered butter, like I do.
Right.
I do.
Then you can do that yourself.
I like being in control of my butter popcorn.
I had to pay a lot of money to just let me behind the concession counter whenever I wanted. So, yeah. This seems like a much more efficient plan.
Yes. Yes. So that was all good. And then I sat there with my plush journal that I did not use and my popcorn and my iced tea. And I watched the movie and I wasn't mad that I watched it. I feel like, and I say this as a writer who has done this, I feel like somebody wrote a script and then they sent it in and an editor polished it up. And then after it got polished up, the writer sent the unpolished version to the filmmaker. That's what I feel like happened.
I will come in on that because I got a follow-up question. So this Muskogee Theater, they serve unsweet iced tea?
Yes.
Fountain or bottle?
Fountain.
Interesting. This theater is real interesting to me. Anyway.
The tub of popcorn and the large soda, $13.90.
Not bad at all.
You are welcome to join me there at any time.
I might, especially for any movie that doesn't go to my theater of choice, including 2024's Imaginary, which I found to be really dull. And it was not playing at my theater of choice that has slowly but surely, but like frog in a boiling pot turned into a religion for me. So I it wasn't playing at Circle. I had to think back to the last movie I didn't see there, and it was Godzilla Minus One. So it's been months and I was like, oh, I don't know what this is. Like, I don't come in and everybody says, oh, hey Mac, how's it going? Like that's, it felt weird. Anyway, I don't like the movie very much at all. Did not find it particularly scary, particularly interesting. Kind of adding on from Donna's assessment of the screenplay, it almost feels like the screenwriters, they decided, I've got like 9 movies worth of mythology here. But then Blumhouse was like, let's just do one movie. And they're like, okay, what you're saying is jam 9 movies worth of mythology in about 15 minutes. Gotcha. I'm on to you, Jason Blum. I'm doing that. And then they just shot that. Aside from a couple of jump scares startling me, exactly what you've seen in movies for decades, the only moment of tension for me was I was sitting in the back row of a theater at Synergy, so I could have dinner at the same time. I brought my notepad, but I had forgotten a pen, so I just had this pad of paper with me. And I'm like, oh, what the hell am I going to do with this? So I'm quietly taking notes on my phone as the movie goes, but with like the table over it and the phone at minimum illumination. So I'm not, I don't want to bother anybody. I'm not here to ruin anybody's good time. I figured I'd be in the back row. I'd probably be alone there. I was not. There was a group to the left of me, a group to the right. The group to the left of me had their cell phone going off repeatedly during the movie, and they were like turning it on full illumination to respond to it. And the group to the right of me were starting to grumble about it. Like, this is a theater. What are they doing? Oh, my God. I'm like, oh, no, they're going to fight about it. And I'm going to be in the middle of it. And that was a moment of uncomfortable tension and suspense for me, far beyond whatever the screen was giving me. So, yeah, very, very bland movie. It seems like every other movie we've seen in a lot of ways, like, oh, isn't it lucky that you had this old house? Oh, yeah, we're going to move in. But, you know, the family's still not quite gelling. And, the little kid. You see things that others don't. Oh, no, there's a thing and we got to go down a hole. And it's Hellraiser 2 now for some reason.
Thank you for noticing that. Thank you. All right. Sorry. Because I was like, the imaginary world feels a lot like Hellraiser 2. Like, I've seen these visuals, like,
I've seen this whole movie before.
I've seen parts of this whole movie, like...
Yeah.
So we saw this yesterday afternoon. I will say this to counterpoint your experience here. Mm-hmm. The junior high girls that were sitting in front of us, they were riveted. Like, it terrified them. So you know what? They had a good time because they were still talking about it in the bathroom after the movie. So you know what? I'm not their demographic. I'm okay with that.
And they haven't seen anything.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
They haven't co-hosted a horror movie podcast for several years and have seen everything at this point.
Exactly. Also had a friend of the podcast, Cass Clark, had mentioned, made a comment about tired dads accidentally confusing imaginary with if and bringing, well, we might have actually seen that in our theater because this dad came in with 2 children, I would say definitely under 10. They had their blankets, their popcorn, and one of them might have been terrified and the other one might have joined the horror fandom. I don't know which one, but it made me laugh because literally right before the movie was starting, just kind of scrolling, and I saw Cass post that and I was like, oh, farts.
Was this rated R? It felt very PG-13.
It was very PG-13. As for my thoughts on the film, I don't disagree with your assessment, Mac. It was very middle of the road, very bland. It took a while to get going. Like, I do think you weren't wrong on the family drama. Like, they had that going first. And it was like, okay, come on. Like, I get it. We're tension, but I need a little bit more than what I've seen in the trailer in Chauncey's Game. Yeah, I mean, it was fine, you know, and it's a good gateway film for horror. If you are well versed in it, you're going to see the Stitches. You're going to see the Hellraiser 2. You're going to see the 1990 It miniseries. You're going to see the Poltergeist gag at the end. You're going to see those things. And that's...
Yeah. A little bit of Oculus, a little bit of... Yeah. I'm blanking on every other movie where a family moves into a house under financial duress and, you know, oh, look, it's haunted.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. I'm not mad that I saw it, but it's not going to be one I go back to. Yeah. And that's that's okay. And if people had a good time with it, that's okay too.
And I think we'll collectively kind of forget it too. If we hadn't done it for opening weekend, we probably never would have come around to it. This is not something we would have been like, oh yeah, put that in a tank for next year.
Right. It's not one that's going to have a slow build. Like, we really missed the boat by not doing it opening weekend. It's not going to be that.
Yeah.
That's okay. Now, for those of you who don't know what Imaginary is about, Max Nemesis and our good buddies at IMDb want you to know that a woman returns to her childhood home to discover that the imaginary friend she left behind is very real and unhappy that she abandoned him.
No, that is not the plot of this movie at all. Well, it is, but she doesn't realize. You know what? IMDb, whatever.
It's Hellraiser 2, but, you know, for kids.
Oh, you know, you want to introduce your children to Pinhead and the other Cenobites. This is the gateway. This is the puzzle box.
If you have a dumb kid who won't get into the puzzle box, this is the movie. Yeah.
Well, good night, ladies and gentlemen. I'm done. That got me.
Can I talk about some bad acting in the movie? Because there's more than its fair share. I think the old lady is really bad. The old lady's so bad, it reminds me of that gag in Wayne's World 2. She's bad in this movie.
That's Betty Buckley. She is an institution.
Betty Buckley.
She cashed a check.
I mean, are we mad at Betty for doing it? No.
But they gave her a lot of exposition there toward the end where I was like, oh, really? The person who barely woke up for this movie? Okay, fine.
Now, dump this. Dump this information.
Betty, we know you are
here's a bucket of lore for you.
Betty, we know you are a trained theater actress, so you doing exposition is fine. You got this. This is going to be, you're a Broadway icon. You're fine, Betty. You're fine. No notes.
counter. Several notes.
Mac, this is why we have not been asked to sit in and help with films right there. Was it, that's it.
Yeah. No, I think Bloom would find me very frustrating. Like, why? Like, have some respect for yourself. You put out some good films every once in a while. Let's not just, you know, fill a release date. Come on, man.
Why do I feel like I'd be the Rick McCallum of that equation with Bloom? Be like,
what a weird deep cut, Rick McCallum. That poor guy. Like, hey, Rick, we sold to Disney. Also, you're fired.
Okay. Oh, we are off the rails. I love it. Okay. I will say this with this film. The things that they felt were going to be a surprise were not a surprise that they telegraphed. Like Chauncey being her imaginary friend, Jess's imaginary friend. That, I mean, you watch the trailer, you're kind of like, yeah, duh. Like, that wasn't a big reveal.
How long did it take anyone to figure out that CB was Chauncey Bear? 1 second? Less than a second? 2 seconds?
It was less than a second, but it had to have been less than a second that I was actually engaged in what was going on. Like, it sort of worked for me because I was like, CB, whatever, fine, let's just keep moving. But for the half moment where I was engaged in the question of CB, I was like, oh yeah, Chauncey Bear. Chauncey Bear, Chauncey Bear. And then she says, Chauncey Bear. And I'm like, ah.
No, I mean, when Dad said it. When Dad said CB.
So
I wasn't engaged in it then. So yes, I guess it kind of worked for me because I wasn't like, ah, aha. No.
When Dad said it, I couldn't really understand what Dad was saying because there was a couple times some of the dialogue, and it might have been the theater. So that's, I don't know, that the dialogue felt a little muffled. And so when he was saying that, I was like, what is he talking about? Like, I felt myself like, what?
Brief interjection.
I am the champion. I am the champion. I got it. Yeah. I got it from Dad. Woo! Of course, we all already knew. We all already knew that, but
yeah,
I still claim the champion status. Okay, go ahead.
Brief interjection also about theater. They never turned off the lights in my theater, so yeah. Just a ghastly experience. Like non-circle movies, I think I'm coming to Muskogee for them.
I will say this. That is not the first time that I've had that personally happen. I think the last time or the last two times we were at Synergy that they did not turn off the lights. So we just freaking got up and found them and turned them off ourselves.
Nice.
We circle cinemaed it ourselves. Yeah. You know,
I like it.
Yeah. We don't go there enough to be like, hey, Kinsey and Billy. No, this was, why is this up? I don't need this light on. So
I love that.
Yeah. That to me, the biggest surprise with this film was that only she saw the bear. Like, to me, that was the biggest surprise.
Biggest surprise for me was that intermittently the dad was British.
The actor really is. Like, there
was a scene where he dropped his American accent, and I was like, is dad British all of a sudden?
I mean, the dad can do an American accent, and he is from across the pond, so
I felt like he had a faint British accent throughout.
This is a one of those, is this dress blue or gray things? Like we all heard something different from Dad. That absolutely central character to the plot of this movie as he was.
I mean, he had some time in between Walking Dead. It's fine.
Was he in Walking Dead?
Yeah, he's Jesus in Walking Dead.
I dropped that show a while, early on.
Yeah.
Oh, when we were talking before we recorded about Dad, you were talking about the daughter's dad, and I was talking about Jessica's dad.
I'm talking about the girl's dad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the girl's dad is Jesus from Walking Dead, and
did Jesus Christ show up in The Walking Dead? I stopped watching that show pretty early on. That show
there is
aggressively went off the rail.
There is a character named Jesus, and I also stopped watching The Walking Dead.
I can't remember when I stopped watching The Walking Dead, but yeah,
it was after Glenn. I just felt so betrayed by their entire handling of Glenn that I feel like
I dropped out before most people, but mm-hmm. Yeah, so Jesus, okay.
Well, yeah.
One thing I found really interesting in the movie is that there was no discussion of race at all. It was just absolutely ignored. This was a true colorblind world, y'all. A true colorblind world. But I kind of think it needed to be because those girls, well, Alice seemed to be okay with Jessica, but Taylor was definitely not okay with Jessica. And I feel like if there had been any acknowledgement of race at all, then their disliking Jessica could have been due to race.
Yeah, it could have read a completely different. Mm-hmm. If this wasn't Blumhouse making this film, that would have been one of the points, I think. I think that would have been like, oh, we need to, you know, add this in the script like that, where mm-hmm. Blumhouse has always been really good about ignoring that, like colorblind casting. You know, any of you guys that have listened to us long enough, when we do watch a Blumhouse film, we do talk about the casual diversity that they they use.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
uh-oh, what you got?
It also felt a little artificial. Like, I think you can easily make the conclusion that the older stepdaughter is a little racist about it because race is there, even if it's not acknowledged. And it is almost acknowledged when the old lady's there and it's like, your stepchildren? Like, there's that half-second pause before the assumption.
But we're going to get to that point. You know, we're going to...
There's a fine line between casual diversity and being weirdly head in the sand about race.
Yeah. Okay.
And I worry that this might have erred on the wrong side of that.
basically they were thinking about it. So they were like, okay, then we're going to be even more where previous films are not thinking about it. And
or it's a part of the story, but it got cut out before the theatrical cut.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Any number of those. Like it feels artificial. I don't know. Casual diversity is good if we're thinking about it in those terms, but ignoring race as a key element in people's lives is a little icky for me, I'll say.
Okay. I can follow that, and I can yeah. see that. I understand what you're saying.
It feels like I don't know the race of the filmmakers offhand, but it feels like the decision of a white filmmaker to say, let's ignore race. Like a black filmmaker would not make that decision.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I agree 100%.
Yeah.
I agree 100%.
Yeah.
And then to immediately switch topics. So I mentioned at the beginning that it felt to me very much like the wrong draft got sent to be filmed. One of the things that really stuck out to me, in fact, I kept waiting for it to matter, was the first time Alice goes down into the basement, they seem to really emphasize the fact that there was a furnace down there. I mean, it really stood out to me that there is an open flame in the basement. They really drew attention to it, especially when later on they made a point of making sure we knew that Alice is afraid of fire. And so I just kept thinking there's a fire in the back. In fact, I had zero doubt the house was going to burn down because there's a fire in the basement. The house was going to burn down from the beginning. The house is going to burn down. And then the fire in the basement didn't matter. And that felt like an editing mistake or a writing mistake or a something mistake. It was a mistake, but it was a mistake that stuck with me and bothered me throughout the film. So
I think what they were trying to convey, because there's another shot where you see Alice looking at the flame on the stove. I think this is shots in a newer filmmaker's hands just to show Alice is clocking anytime there's fire. So that's why we had the furnace. That's why we had early before that with her, you know, watching the flame when Jess is making tea. I think that's what's trying to be conveyed. I think you're illustrating that it wasn't done well.
Okay. You think that's what that was? Because I didn't see Alice paying particular attention to the fire. So maybe I just missed that.
Well, and it may not. I don't know with the furnace scene if she's actually looking at it, but it's more that's just my read.
It feels like it's maybe foundational to the movie because I just looked at the runtime. It's an hour and 44 minutes. That doesn't feel like a studio or distributor mandated runtime. Like, hey, cut this amount out of it, make it 80 minutes, 90 minutes, whatever.
Yeah. For PG-13 horror, that's unusual that they're giving it that long. Like, I'm wondering.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I know we will because this is kind of the whole bag, but I'm sure we'll have an unrated cut eventually come out that's maybe deleted
maybe 15,
scene.
20 minutes late. Yeah. Late longer. Yeah. I don't think I'll be there for it.
I probably won't either. So that's okay. But I feel like with that runtime, maybe a last minute decided, let's do PG-13 and not R and just little things to cut.
Yeah. So maybe.
So I don't
know. It did get delayed by about a month. And I think the cover story was the strikes throwing the schedule off. But I don't really think the strike is throwing things off as much as I thought it might have. So I wonder if they just went back and said, okay, let's cut out X amount of minutes out of this thing. Hard to tell.
The strike is helping films that I think that they can say, oh, due to the strike and maybe finish effects, you know, cut scenes, give them just a little bit more time.
So your position is that this movie has finished special effects. That's interesting.
I'm not using this movie specifically, Mac. This is a general term, a broad.
Right. No, I agree with you, but yeah. I made a little funny there because the special effects of the bear at the end were the most unremarkable thing I think I've seen in a movie in a very, very long time.
The effects that I liked in this film and I'm a sucker for these type of moments, is when the thing is like in the frame, and unless you're paying attention, do you know, like, you don't, like, you see what the dream entity is there, like, he, that watching him show up, and you can't really make out, like, what am I seeing, what, you know,
sure.
Like, I'm a sucker for those, and I liked those moments in this movie, like, those moments were...
But when the bear is really a bear, I was like, oh,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not... less frightened now than when I started, so thanks, bear.
Yeah, I'm not trying to defend the bear, just so we're clear on that.
Yeah.
But like I said, the junior high girls in my theater, they were scared of this movie, and I'm not Blum's audience for this one, and that's okay. I'm okay with that. Can we talk about the next door neighbor and how it goes from 0 to 1,000 when he's like, oh, I got drugs.
Liam, like, oh my gosh.
Every character is like, I'm this, now I'm this, but then I'm back to this.
Like,
I don't know what Liam's deal was. Like, he was in. Liam was in.
But Liam, just the fact that it's like, oh, I got this. And I'm like, that does look like Molly. Yeah. I was just like.
Liam is too handsome. He's been in for his whole life. He doesn't know that he has to have some game in order to close. It's just like, oh, girls just like me. And then what?
I'm just saying, if Liam wouldn't have been scuzzy, she was watching Warm Bodies. There's beautiful people in Warm Bodies. It's horror. They're snuggling. Come on, man. Like,
oh, yeah. No, the runway was clear within that certain framework. Yeah.
Yeah. You ruined it with, like, yeah. Let's watch a movie. Yeah. Yeah. Come on, Liam.
Why did he put allergy medicine in a baggie like that? What a dink. What a dumb little boy he was.
For sure.
Well, and then when he was trying to grab the booze too, like, I don't think.
Yeah.
You know what? You guys are saying Liam had game. I don't know if Liam had game or.
No game.
No game.
He was cute and never had to develop game.
All right.
Other guys had to develop some kind of game because we weren't as cute as Liam. Because
what I was going to say was a little counterpoint to that was that this also kind of felt like, oh, this is the first time I'm going to a girl's house. Yeah, I'm a little cute, but I don't know what to do, what she's into. So I'm going to get allergy medicine. And say it's Molly, because maybe she's into it. Okay, she's not into that. So then let's go to the liquor cabinet and just grab two, you know, vodka and Jack Daniels, and let's just make some drinks. And I've heard apple juice in movies, so let's tell her to fill it up. So I think Liam was on the cusp of, like, oh, I'm cute, so I don't have to do anything, where this is the test run. That's my headcanon for this character that had maybe 10 minutes total of screen time.
And did really not much to further the plot, because he saw the bear too.
So
he did.
Yeah.
He did see the bear.
So that
not,
was
not great on that twist. Like, oh, we're the only ones to see the bear. Ignore the boy. Okay. We're the only ones who saw the bear.
So editor Billy brought up that point, was like, what did Liam see exactly? If he didn't see the, if she only saw the bear, what is Liam seeing? What?
Well, when you trip on Benadryl, you do see things.
Yeah, but Benadryl has a very specific thing you see, which is the Hat Man, FYI. If you, there's a.
I go to sleep. And I don't see nothing.
I go to sleep too, but there is like. I this may be just the side of TikTok I'm on, just so we're clear here. But people talk about when they take Benadryl and they go to sleep, there is a guy that they see called the Hat Man.
I just see the back of my eyelids.
Yeah.
I don't see a Hat Man. I gotta look up Hat Man.
I'm not one of those people that have, you know, the times I've taken Benadryl, I've seen the Hat Man. That's not me, but apparently that's a thing with Benadryl.
Hat Man Benadryl. What do you know?
I told you, my side of TikToks that I'm on is, you don't know what you're going to get, so.
High doses of Benadryl can cause heart arrhythmias, delirium, psychoses, seizures, coma, and death. Don't abuse drugs, including allergy meds.
especially allergy meds, because those are easy to abuse.
Yeah.
And this guy's got no game, so I don't know how he would have gotten Molly on his own. He would have shown up like, hey, drug dealer.
Hey.
Do you have the Molly?
Good looking guys with no game. All you had to do was sit down on the couch. That's all you had to do.
Yeah.
Sit down on the couch.
Yeah.
Mac pointed it out. Runway was there. Like,
Traffic controllers just bringing them in. And he was like, is this what cute boys do?
They definitely don't call said girl's little sister psychos. They don't do that.
No.
We should really pity the pretty, because they just aren't in a situation where they have to develop skills.
Donna, get on that button. Pity the pretty. Get on that button, Macon.
My goodness.
Not about Liam. I do have a random note, and I just want to read it because it makes me laugh so much, which is, baby girl, that's ritual magic. When they're actually putting everything together, and then the fire's brought up, I was like, oh, that's ritual magic right there.
Yeah.
And see, this is why you shouldn't have a little wide variety and talk to your children about a lot of things. So when they are presented with things that look innocent enough, then you can have somebody like, say, Auntie Kinsey, that can be like, oh, no, that's ritual magic. We probably shouldn't do that.
So what you're saying is we should scrap the rule we already decided on and replace it. Talk to your children about ritual magic.
I think pros and cons. Give it even-handed. I have a couple of notes here that I can't make heads or tails out of because I was typing them using like the gesture thing on the keyboard. I'm math be can't on concerning. Have no clue what that was supposed to be. And kiss America. That's it. That's all I've got.
Kiss Army?
No, I don't think that would have been something I was thinking about at that time.
I mean...
I will say that not every woman can pull off the yellow sundress.
Just did.
Jessica pulled it off.
She did.
Yeah. And keep in mind that you don't always have to stab yourself with scissors. Sometimes you can just tear down your stepdaughter.
Right. Like, once again, this goes back to, we're at, you know, maybe a 5 with that. And then Jess goes to 1,000 with stabbing herself in the hand with the scissors.
Yeah. Spare your hand. My God, you've got arms, you've got legs, you've got back. Just don't stab your hand. One of these days I'm going to put up the homunculus of the brain and show you how many nerve endings you have in your hands. My God.
And that was Dr. Donna's Science Corner for Imaginary.
Don't stab your hand. Don't cut your hand. Not your hand.
The only other thing I have is that I did expect them somehow to get part of Jessica's dad's soul back. Like, basically the part that was left in Imaginary that when he looked into Chauncey's deadlights.
That would have been nice.
Yeah, like I expected that. And yeah, when Jessica had her big happy ending, I looked over at Billy. I was like, she's still there. When they're all like, and I love you, Mom. And I'm like, once she called her mom, I was like, yep, Jessica's still there.
I was so frustrated with the movie. I was thinking another Wayne's World gag, like the super happy ending. Isn't it all great that we're all better people?
So, quote-wise, we didn't have a lot of quote suggestions, very light for us. You know, I one of the ones I liked, so your imaginary friend was a terrorist. Mac, what was the one you had?
On quotes? Yeah. Come on, it's your happy place, which felt on brand for us.
Yeah, it did. Had that one. But the one that I fought for, and I felt seen in that moment, and for those of you that know me, know why I felt seen, was characters who do bad things aren't all bad. So I also should let it be known I have the hat trick this week. Not the film I expected to have a hat trick on, but here we are. And our rule is, careful which white women you trust. I felt like there's a lot of things that could have been saved because we've danced around the race issue. And I think in a different filmmaker's hands, I think it would have definitely, it would have made the impact that it should, that you're having the white savior kind of come in like, oh, I know all of this. I know. It would have hit probably the intention, is just my thoughts with it. But and then poll, we kind of went very on the nose with the poll, and that's totally okay. Do you remember your imaginary friend?
I didn't have an imaginary friend, but what I did have was a lot of stories. I didn't, where I grew up, I didn't really have anyone that was my age. And so I had a very rich imaginary world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So no imaginary friend, but I would get very into the stories I was telling myself.
I didn't have an imaginary friend, but I did imagine that myself from the future came to visit me.
Oh, this was not, when we were discussing off mic, Mac, this was right. Not what I was expecting you to say.
No, that's...
Would you like me to tell you what I was expecting?
What were you expecting?
I was expecting to say that you and Batman were solving crimes and being BFFs forever, doing Mac and Batman things. That's where I thought this yours was going. I was not expecting heavy sci-fi.
No, that would be the extent of an imaginary friend. I thought, you know, I felt like me from the future would have some things to say to me.
And what did you from the future have to say?
Not much. We just kind of hung out. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So,
even then, we had the sense that interfering with the timeline was probably a bad idea. But
oh, there it is. There's Mac. Yep, that tracks.
Yep.
So you agreed with each other on that point?
We did. We both saw Back to the Future at one,
oh, okay,
two, and three.
At very formative ages that...
Yeah.
So I did have an imaginary friend, but also like you, Donna, I also did a lot of stories in my head that mm-hmm. sometimes imaginary friend was part of, sometimes it wasn't. But it was Wicket from the Ewoks, and sometimes the other Ewoks showed up, and we aww. Just hung out, and uh-huh. sometimes we just...
I'm just curious, did you ever try to roast anyone over a fire?
No, no, but we did rescue Han Solo a lot, being the Ewoks, so...
Yeah, yeah. Was he grateful?
To Kinsey, yes, he was. Yes. He good. Was immensely grateful.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that.
That feels like the full answer on the imaginary friend question.
We can talk more about that later.
Okay. Who wants to go first on Happy Place?
I can. I actually have two Happy Places.
Oh, two. All right.
One is the popcorn bucket at the Muskogee Apex Cinema. I just decided yesterday that that would be my happy place because, wow, it is happy. The other is I have been binge watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine on Netflix, mm-hmm. which turns out only has four seasons on Netflix.
Oh.
And then I had the, yeah, which is disappointing because do you know what happens at the end of season four?
Laura and I are rewatching Brooklyn Nine-Nine as well, so when we hit that, we'll have to make other plans. Yeah,
it is quite a cliffhanger. And then I found myself in the middle of some work, and I didn't have time to be binge watching. So I just found myself spending a lot of time going, I'm really worried about Jake and Rosa. I hope they're okay. Anyway, and then I picked it back up and continued watching, and I'm just really enjoying it. I don't remember what caused me to stop watching it when it was on TV. There was something that, not that I didn't like it, but there was just something that caused me to not be able to continue watching it at the time it was on TV. And damn, that's a good show.
Peacock has the remaining seasons.
Yes, that's where I'm watching it now.
Yeah, okay.
So anyway, Brooklyn Nine-Nine is my other happy place. Muskogee, Apex Cinema, and Brooklyn Nine-Nine. My happy places for this week.
Not necessarily happy on its face, but I've been under the weather the last three, essentially since the last time we recorded. But it was also intersecting with the midterms time. So I had, you know, X amount of papers due and all that sort of stuff. And I didn't ask for one extension. I got through it.
Nice. Nice.
Yay.
Others would, like, even professors were like, I know stuff's going around, so if any of you need an extension on assignment, let me know. I'm like, never.
Very nice. I only have one happy place, which is Billy and I have been playing Baldur's Gate 3 together, so I'm making a lot of bad decisions. He is not making bad decisions, but we're playing together, and it's always fun when we can do a game where we can co-op together and play, and Baldur's Gate is providing lots of entertainment for that, and we're just, it's fun. We're having a good time, and I enjoy it. So that is my happy place.
Okay.
All right. Well, you can find us on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. We're Beyond the Cabin in the Woods. Our website and Blue Sky username is beyondthecabinthewoods.com. I am on Instagram and Threads and Blue Sky as @Callista77.
You can find me on Blue Sky at dragongoblin.com, at dragongoblin on Instagram. There's no I in goblin.
I can be found on almost any social media platform that might be still in existence and or viable at the time that you're listening this, at Party Apocalypse. Partyapocalypse.com also includes this show and other fine podcasts, including The Holodeck is Broken with myself, Laura, Canyon, and Eris. They also co-host a podcast on the network, Disorganized, a Criminal Minds podcast. There are full runs of Friendables, Two Friends Talking About Hannibal Lecter, The Fourth Wall, and As the Myth Turns, books, blogs, movie reviews, and nothing else.
As always, thank you to our editor, Billy, for keeping the train on the track, making us sound fantastic. We do appreciate all that you do for us.
Thank you, Billy.
And thank you for listening. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us if you aren't already doing so.
And be sure to talk to your children about ritual magic.
Well, I'm not reading the Latin.
I mean, that is part of ritual magic, is the Latin.
Yeah.
You know,